A recent podcast is sending shockwaves through the tech industry. Inside, Microsoft CEO Satya Nadella made a prediction that could change everything we know about software. And I mean everything. Let me be direct. Nadella just predicted the death of all software applications as we know them. This isn't hyperbole. This is Microsoft's CEO saying that the entire foundation of how we interact with technology is about to fundamentally change. Here's what he said, word for word. I think the notion that business applications exist, that's probably where they'll all collapse, right in the agent era. Let that sink in for a moment. The CEO of the company that brought us Windows, Office, and basically created the software industry as we know it is telling us it's all going to collapse. But why? Here's where it gets interesting. According to Nadella, what we call software today is essentially just a fancy interface sitting on top of databases. He breaks it down to something called CRUD, create, read, update, and destroy. That's all your favorite apps are doing. They're just pretty windows dressing up database operations. Listen to what Satya says in this clip.
Satya, one thing everybody's talking about these agents, and if you just kind of think forward in your mind a bit, you can imagine all kind of players wanting to enact action on other apps and other data that may be on a system. And, you know, Microsoft's in an interesting position because you control the Windows ecosystem, but you have apps on like the iPhone ecosystem or the Android ecosystem. And how do you think about, and this is, you know, partially a terms of service question, partially a partnership question, will Apple allow Microsoft to control other apps on iOS? Will Microsoft let ChatGPT instantiate apps and take data from apps on Windows OS? I mean, you get the question. It goes all the way to when you start thinking about search and commerce, like, you know, will Booking.com let, you know, Gemini run transactions on it without their permission or knowledge?
Yeah, I think that this is the most interesting question, right? I mean, to some degree, it's unclear exactly how this will happen. There is a slight, very old school way of thinking about some of this, which is, if you remember, you know, how did business applications of various kinds manage to do interop, right? They did manage, you know, manage that interop using connectors, and people had connector licenses. So there was a business model that emerged, right? I mean, SAP was one of the most classic ones where, you know, you could say, hey, you can access SAP data as long as you had connectors. So there's a part of me which says something like that will emerge as when agent-to-agent interface occurs. It's unclear exactly what happens in consumer, because consumer, the value exchange was a lot of, you know, advertising and traffic and what have you. Some of those things go away in an agentic world. So I think the business model is slightly unclear to me on the consumer side. But on the enterprise side, I think what will happen is everybody will say, hey, in order for you to either action into my action space or to get data out of my sort of schema, so to speak, there is some kind of an interface to my agent that is licensed, so to speak. And I think that that's a reason. Like today, for example, when I go to Copilot at Microsoft, I have connectors into Adobe, into my instance of SAP, obviously our instance of CRM, which right. is Dynamics. So it's fascinating. In fact, when was the last time any of us really went to a business application, right? We license all these SaaS applications, we hardly use them, and somebody in the org is sort of inputting data into it. But in the AI age, the intensity goes up because all that data now is easy, right? You're query away. I can literally say, hey, I'm meeting with Bill. Tell me about all the companies that Benchmarks invested in. It's both taking the web, anything that's in my CRM database, collating it all put together, giving me a note, what have you. So to some degree, all that, I think, can be monetized by us and by even these connectors.
But more explicitly, like the thing that could happen really quickly, because there's been talk about it, like, would you allow ChatGPT on the Windows OS to just start opening random apps and take.
Now, that's an interesting one, right? So that over-the-top computer use, who is going to permit that, right? So which is it the user or is it the operating system? Like on Windows, there is quite frankly not anything I can do to prevent that other than some security guardrails, right? So I could sort of definitely, like, because I think if they became a secure, like one of my big fears is the security risk.
Right.
Right, if some malware got downloaded and that malware started sort of actioning stuff, right, that's when it's really dangerous. So I think those are the ones that we will build into the OS itself, right, which is some elevated access and privilege that this computer use stuff happens. But at the end of the day, the user will be in control on an open platform like Windows. And I'm sure Apple and you know, Google will have a lot more control, so they won't allow it. And so that's, in some sense, you could say that's a advantage they have, or, you know, depending on how AT rules on all of those, you know, ultimately it'll be an interesting thing
to
watch.
Well, you flip that around and then we can move on. But like, would you allow the Android OS or let's just call it the Android AI or the iOS AI to read email, you know, through a Microsoft client on that smartphone?
Yeah, I mean, we kind of like, you know, for example, one of the things I always think about is, I don't know whether that was value leaking or did it actually help us, right? Which is, we licensed the sync for Outlook to Apple for Apple Mail.
Right.
It was an interesting case. And I think that there was a lot of value leaked, perhaps, but at the same time, I think that was one of the reasons why we were able to hold on to Exchange, right? It would have been doubly problematic.
Understood.
If we had not done that. And so one of the things I think is, going to your point, Bill, if we are building out, the reason we are going to do this is we have to have a trust system around Microsoft 365. We just cannot sort of say, hey, any agent comes in and does anything, because after all, first, it's not our data, it's our customer's data, right? It'll be, and so therefore, the customer will have to permit it. The IT folks in the customer will have to permit it. It's not like some blanket flag I can set. And then the second thing is, it has to have a trust boundary. So I think what we will do is, it's kind of, in it's an interesting way, it's kind of like what Apple Intelligence is doing. Think of it as, we will do that around M365.
I played with it a lot today. I'd highly recommend people download it. It's super interesting.
Yeah.
So, Sachin, you know, clicking on this, you know, Mustafa has said that 2025 will be the year of infinite memory. And Bill and I have talked a lot, dating back to the start of this year, that we think the next 10x function, you know, it sounds like you agree, on ChatGPT is really, you know, this persistent memory combined with being able to take some actions on our behalf. So we're already seeing the starts of memory. And I'm pretty convinced as well that 2025, we're, you know, it seems like that one's pretty well solved. But this question of actions, when am I going to be able to say to ChatGPT, book me the Four Seasons in Seattle next Tuesday at the lowest price, right? And Bill and I, you know, have gone back and forth on this one. And it would seem that computer use is the early, you know, test case for that. But do you have any sense? Does that seem like a hard one from here to you? Price, right? And Bill and I, you know, have gone back and forth on this one. And it would seem that computer use is the early, you know, test case for that. But do you have any sense? Does that seem like a hard one from here to you?
Imagine your business consistently appearing at the top of local search results, driving customers to your door and skyrocketing your sales. Sounds like a dream.
Yeah, I mean, the most...
From here to you?
Yeah, I mean, the...
Seem like test case for that. But do you have any sense? Does that seem like a hard one from here to you?
Yeah, I mean, the most open-ended action space is still hard. But to your point, there are two things, or maybe three things, that are really exciting beyond, I'll just say, I'm sure we'll talk about it, the scaling laws itself and capabilities of the raw models. One is memory. The other is tools use or actions. And the other one I would say is even entitlements, right? Which is, you know, what can you, like, you know, one of the most interesting products we have even is Purview inside of Microsoft, because increasingly, what do you have permissions to? What can you get? You know, you have to be able to access things in a safe way. Somebody needs to have governance on it and what have you. So if you put all those three things together, and this agent is going to then be more governable, and when it comes to actions, it is verifiable, and then it has memory, then I think you're off to a very different place where for doing more autonomous work, so to speak. I still think, one of the things I always think is your build, I like this Copilot as the UI for AI, because even in a fully autonomous world, from time to time, you'll raise exceptions, you'll ask for permission, you'll ask for invocation, what have you. And so therefore, this UI layer will be the organizing layer. In fact, that's kind of why we think of Copilot as the organizing layer for work artifacts and workflow. But to your fundamental point, I don't think the models, like take even 4.0, right? Not even going to 0.1. 4.0 is pretty good with function calling. So you can do in the enterprise setting, significant more so than consumer, because consumer web function calling is just hard. Where at least in an open-ended web, you can do it for a couple of websites. But once you say, hey, let's go do a book me a ticket on anything, and it just, and if there's schema changes on the back end and so on, it'll trip over. You can teach it that. That's where I think O1 can get better if it's a verifiable, auto-gradable sort of process on Rails. But I think we are maybe a year to 2 years away from doing more and more. But I think at least from an enterprise perspective, going and doing, here's my sales agent, here's my marketing agent, here's my supply chain agent, which can do more of these autonomous tasks. We built 10 or 15 of them into Dynamics, right? Even looking into sort of my supplier communications and automatically handling my supplier communications, updating my databases, changing my inventories, my apply. Those are the kinds of things that you can do today, I would say.
The Mustafa made this comment about near infinite memory in a, yeah, I'm sure you heard it or hear it internally. Is there any clarification you can offer about that, or is that more to come?
I think that, I mean, at some level, the idea that you have essentially a type system for your memory, right? That's the thing, right? Which is, it's not like every time I start, you have to organize.
I get the idea. He made it sound like you guys had an internal technical breakthrough on this front.
Yeah, I mean, we have done, like, there's an open source project even. I think it's, I forget, like, it's the same set of folks who did all the TypeScript stuff who are working on this. So what we're trying to do is essentially take memory and schematize it and sort of make it available such that you can go. Like each time I start, let's just imagine I'm prompting on some new prompt. Yeah. I know how to cluster based on everything else I've done. And then that type matching and so on, I think is a good way for us to build up a memory system.
So shifting maybe to enterprise AI, Satya, you know, the Microsoft AI business is already reported to be about $10 billion. You've said that it's all inference and that you're not actually renting raw GPUs to others to train on because your inference demand is so high. So as we think about this, there's a lot of, I think, skepticism out there in the world as to whether or not major workloads are moving, you know, and so if you think about the key revenue products people are using today and how it's driving that inference revenue for you today and how that may be similar or different from Amazon or Google, I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, I think that's a good, so the way for us this thing has played out is, you got to remember, most of our training stuff with OpenAI is sort of more investment logic, right? So it's sort of not in our quarterly results, it's more in the other income,
right,
based on our investment. So so that means the only
or
thing
loss,
that shows up
is it
in
maybe or loss, other income, yeah, or loss, that, right?
That is right. Right now, for quarterly results, it's more in the other income,
right,
based on our investment. So So that means the only
or
thing that shows up
is
in
maybe or loss, other income or loss, that, right?
That is right. That is right. Right now, that's how it shows up. So most of the revenue or all the revenue is pretty much our API business. Or in fact, to your point, ChatGPT's inference costs are there, right? So that's a different piece. Right. And so the fact is, the big hit apps of this era are what? ChatGPT, Copilot, GitHub Copilot, and the APIs of OpenAI and Azure OpenAI, right? So in some sense, if you had to list out the 10 most sort of hit apps, you know, these would probably be in the 4 or 5 of them. And so therefore, that's the biggest driver. The advantage we have had, and OpenAI has had, which is we've had 2 years of runway, right? Pretty much uncontested. To your point, Bill made the point about, hey, everybody is awake, but, and it might be, I don't think there will be ever again, maybe a 2-year lead like this. Who knows? You say that and somebody else, you know, drops some sample and suddenly right. blows the world away. But that said, I think it's unlikely that that type of, lead could be established with some foundation model. But we have that advantage. That was the great advantage we've had with OpenAI. OpenAI was able to really build out this escape velocity with ChatGPT. But on the API side, the biggest thing that we were able to gain was, Shopify or Stripe or Spotify. These were not customers of Azure. They were all customers of GCP or they were customers of AWS. So suddenly we got access to many, many more logos who are all quote unquote digital natives who are using Azure in some shape or fashion and so on. So that's sort of one. And when it comes to the traditional enterprise, I think it's scaling. Like, I mean, literally it is, people are playing with Copilot on one end and then are building agents on the other end using Foundry. But like these things are design wins and project wins and they're slow, but they're starting to scale. And again, the fact that we've had 2 years of runway on it, I think I like that business a lot more. And that's one of the reasons why the adverse selection problems here would have been lots of tech startups all looking for their H100 allocation in small batches, right? That, having watched what happened to Sun Microsystems in the .com, I always worry about that, which is, you just can't chase everybody building models. In fact, even in the investor side, I think the sentiment is changing, which is now people are wanting to be more capital light and build on top of other people's models and so on and so forth. And if that's the case, everybody who was looking for a H100 will not want to, want to look for it more. So that's kind of what we've been selective on.
And your sense is that for the others, that training of those models and those model clusters was a much bigger part of their AI revenue versus yours.
I don't know. I mean, this is where I'm speaking for other people's results. I don't know. I mean, it's just, I go back and say, what are the other big hit apps? I don't know what they are. What models do they run? Where do they run them? Obviously Google's Gemini. I don't know. When I look at the DAO numbers of any of these AI products, there is ChatGPT.
Right.
And then there is, even Gemini, I'm very surprised at the Gemini numbers. I mean, obviously, I think it will grow, because of all the inherent distribution. But it's kind of interesting to say that they're not that many. In fact, we talk a lot more about AI scale, but there is not that many hit apps, right? There is ChatGPT, GitHub Copilot, there's Copilot, and there's Gemini. I think those are the four.
So in the future, we won't need these interfaces anymore. Instead, AI agents will interact directly with these databases. Think about that. No more clicking through menus, no more navigating complex interfaces. You'll simply tell an AI what you want, and it will handle everything else. Here's a real example. Instead of opening Excel, creating a spreadsheet, importing data, and creating a graph, you'll just say, "Show me a visualization of our top 5 customers by revenue." The AI agent will handle everything else, accessing the database, analyzing the data, and creating the visualization. But it gets even more interesting. Nadella isn't just talking about simple tasks. These AI agents will be able to handle complex business logic and even write their own code to accomplish what you need. They'll work across multiple databases and systems seamlessly. This has massive implications for the entire software industry. Think about it. If you don't need applications anymore, what happens to all the SaaS companies? What happens to application developers? What happens to the entire way we think about software? Now, I've worked in SaaS, have been a part of building software as a service into my own agency, and I'll be honest, I wouldn't start another SaaS company right now. The industry is about to undergo a fundamental transformation. This isn't happening in some distant future. Microsoft is already implementing this vision with their Copilot technology. They're reimagining Excel, Word, and their entire suite of products, not as applications, but as specialized agents that work together under a larger AI system. Here's what this means for you. If you're in tech, you need to start thinking about how this shift will affect your career. If you're building a company, you need to consider how this changes your product strategy. And if you're an investor, you need to seriously reconsider your portfolio's exposure to traditional software companies. The future of software isn't about better applications. It's about no applications at all. It's about AI agents that understand what we want and just make it happen. Before I wrap up, let me know in the comments, how do you think this will affect your industry? Are you ready for a world without traditional software application? If you found this analysis valuable, hit that like button and subscribe for more insights into the future of technology. Thanks for watching, and I'll see you in the next one.